will thou come, will fortune. He will. Great. Marcus is game changer. It's about to get real. These are the kind of guys I need to have in the locker room. The championship type guys. Third guys, you just got to recognize, I got to pay the money. I got to keep it. Everybody had an opinion.
They came with so much bravado and so much swagger.
We'll make it. We are not going to make it. Sometimes you got to create space where there's no space.
I can't argue with LeBron with this.
I do have a big problem with execution. Right?
He burned it. A lot of bridges. He's going to be hated in Chicago. He's going to be hated in Cleveland. He's going to be hated in New York. And that's what I'm excited to see.
I blame it on Nintendo. I blame it on the fact that they never played against a team that's going to be as dominant as this team could be.
The true villain team. The team that everybody wants to smack in the mouth every time they play them.
All right. Welcome to the Real Sports Guys, where real guys talk real sports. It's your man, Marcus, the Game Changer. I'm in the building with my man, D. Wills. Holler at the people.
What's up? We just survived all you people up in the Midwest. Get your shovels out. Get them snow blowers. If you didn't make that investment, you ain't going anywhere tomorrow. But I'm here, locked in the snow, ready to talk real sports type stuff. So I'm happy to be here tonight.
Oh, man, you talking about that investment, man. Yeah, I'm one of those people that didn't make that investment, man. You know, I'm younger. But, you know, I've been out there shoveling my driveway for the last couple of years. And this year I upgraded. I have a new home. And thus I have a bigger driveway. And that hasn't worked out so well. The snow has been kicking my ass.
If you ain't going to get a snowblower, you better invest in some ibuprofen.
Yeah, man, yeah. Until these kids get old enough to get out there and join me, I'm going to have to, I'm going to have to get a snowblower next year, man. I'm going to go ahead and have to bite that bullet and do my back a favor and get that snowblower. It's going to happen, though. It's going to happen next year. I'm getting the snow blow. I'm giving in. The snow wins.
And the Hawk, as they call it, Chicago, reached all the way down into Dallas and touched them in Fort Worth and down in Arlington. I mean, everybody was getting hit by the snow. But Mother Nature's like, I will be represented at the Super Bowl.
Mother Nature said, I got tickets to the Super Bowl, too. It can be indoors. I got all this outdoor stuff covered, though.
We're going to take care of that.
Oh, man. But, yeah, welcome to the Real Sports Guys. Real guys talk real sports, you know, down south in the Gulf Coast area, in the tropical states, Florida and Louisiana, and down there they have hurricane season. If you live in the Midwest right now, January, February, it's blizzard season, baby. It is straight-up blizzard season. So we know y'all hunkered down at the crib, you know, hopefully you got a cold one, nice blanket or something, you're nice and warm, comfortable, whatever you're doing, and, you know, hopefully you're listening to us, and if you are, feel free to call into the show at any time tonight. We got a bunch of topics that we're going to hit from NBA, of course we're going to touch base on the Super Bowl, but feel free to call in and weigh in at any time, 1-347-989-0844. Get on with the Real Sports Guys. We only ask one thing, is that you do not come weak.
You will get the what?
The Mutombo finger. Big D can say, nothing here. Nothing here. we don't want to have to break out the campaign. But, oh, man, so we're going to get into it. We're going to start out. Man, it's a couple places I want to go right away. You know, one place I wanted to go, and I was thinking about this, and I was listening to you know, we're fans of, we say this all the time, we give this disclaimer so that y'all don't think we out there biting other people's topics or anything like that, because we don't do that. We both old school hip hop heads, and we both operate under the rule that there's no biting allowed. So we give credit where credit's due, and we get ideas from other people. So I was listening to Boris and Bernstein on The Score. We get that all the way up here in Madison, Wisconsin. All my Chicago heads know what I'm talking about. All my Northern Illinois heads know what I'm talking about.
That's right.
So we get The Score up this way, and I was listening to Boris and Bernstein, and they were talking about the NBA All-Star game coming up. And it got me to thinking, and y'all know me, I acknowledge LeBron's talent. He is the best player in the game skill-wise, as far as what he can do on the court. You'd be hating if you were to argue against him not being the best, if not in the top two, as far as players in the league. And given Kobe has kind of age is starting to catch up with Kobe a little bit, I think LeBron has cemented himself in that top spot. So I can admit that. I'm still not a major fan of him as an all-time great or in that conversation for the greatest of all time. He can be the greatest of this era, but I think he's several tiers away from putting himself into that conversation of greatest of all time. And another point that was pointed out to me that really kind of supports my stance on LeBron, as we were talking about, as I was listening to Boris and Bernstein talk about this All-Star game, they got to talking about the dunk contest and how it's lost its luster a little bit and how it's not as much of an event as it used to be, so to speak, as back in the day when Doc was doing it and then Mike and Dominique took the mantle. And then, you know, in 2000 we had the Vince show, which was crazy. And even Kobe stepped in and did it for a couple of years and carried the torch for a minute. Then we had Dwight Howard doing his thing. So we've had moments here and there, but it hasn't been that consistent buzz around the dunk contest in a long time. And from year to year, it's kind of hit or miss. But they were talking about that. You know, when Jordan got in the dunk contest, he got in it to win it. And they were saying that anything that Jordan did, he wanted to win. And his motivation was winning. And he was crazy and pathological about his winning, you know? And this is what I don't see with LeBron. I think what motivated Jordan was he wanted to beat you at whatever it was. If y'all was flipping a coin, he wanted to get it right every – he wanted to call the right side of the coin every time no matter what. And that's what motivated him, and that's what drove him. And I think that's a generational thing. When you look at LeBron, I think what drives LeBron is LeBron wants to be famous. And this is what I realize, is LeBron wants to be famous. That's why you got the decision. That's why when LeBron came out, one of his most important goals, he wants to be the first billionaire athlete. You know, he comes from a generation, the generation today, where people just want to be famous for anything. And that's the motive, driving force for a lot of young people in this generation. They don't care what they're famous for. You know, you got the Paris Hiltons, the Kardashians, the Perez Hiltons, you know, the TMZ generation, where it's just about, I want to be famous. I want to be known. I want to be famous for something. And I think that's what drives LeBron's decision-making process, is he wants to be famous. He wants to wow you. He wants you to be in awe of him. He wants to be famous. He wants to be the most famous athlete in the world. If he has to win to do that, then he will. If he can do that without winning, I think he's cool with that. Which is why I think LeBron has never entered in a dunk contest. Because he doesn't have that crazy. He's not crazy about winning like Mike was. And that's why if I were ever to say, if you put Mike in his prime against LeBron in his prime on a basketball court and they play a game to 11, I'm picking Mike because Mike is crazy. Mike had that crazy about winning. LeBron don't have that. And I think Kobe has that crazy about winning. I don't think LeBron has that. So that's my LeBron soapbox for the moment. And that was just a revelation that, you know, further supports my view on LeBron. And because they were talking about, well, you know, why the dunk contest is falling off and how Mike and Dominique and the competitiveness of those guys took it to another level. And I thought to myself, why didn't LeBron do a dunk contest? You know, he was in the All-Star game. He was there. He could have done a dunk contest. But I think he felt like that wasn't going to raise his profile. It wasn't going to make him any more famous. And so I think because of that, he chose not to participate. You know, where I think Mike would have done it just to beat the Cats, just to say, just like Mike entered the three-point contest. Why? He just wanted to beat everybody. And he was crazy about winning like that. And LeBron doesn't have that gene. He doesn't have that switch. He doesn't have that trigger, that button. He doesn't have that in his arsenal. And I think, you know, I think that's what's going to inhibit him from really crossing that threshold, or even being in that conversation. Even if I think eventually championships will come for him, but I think, again, championships with him are going to be a byproduct of trying to be a global icon, trying to be, you know, larger than life, trying to be the most famous person he can be, instead of trying to be a winner, trying to be the greatest ball player he can be, trying to dominate a game in a way only he can dominate a game.
Yeah, I mean, and I think that's a pretty good observation. And I think that, I mean, if you think about it, you know, but Jordan lost one to Dominique, right?
Yeah.
You know, but it was his competitive juices that kept him fighting. And, you know, I think Jordan wasn't afraid to be vulnerable because he wanted to win so much, you know, and everything, like you said. And I think that goes back when you try to be famous, you worry about being vulnerable. So if I go out here and I don't perform, that's a notch in my brand. Not the fact that I'm just going out here. I mean, Kobe went into the slam dunk contest because he knew that was part of his lineage of being the greatest. You know, that's why he got in it. He's like, Mike did it. I'm going to do it. I'm going to win it, you know, and do it. I mean, Kobe got in there because he felt like that's part. And LeBron has never felt, like you said, never felt the need to be part of that as passing the torch. And, you know, I mean, you're making some good points about that. And that's something that, you know, again, you know, what drives you, you know, what's going to get there. Maybe it's a byproduct, you know, of him just, you know, being in the right place at the right time and being that good is going to get him a championship. But he don't have that cutthroat, like, I'm going to cut you, you know, to win. He don't have that dog. And like I said, his talent meter is off the charts.
Yeah,
his dog meter is not off the chart, and that's the difference. Because if his dog meter was off the chart, he would be at so many heights. I mean, he'd be doing so many different things that his phenomenal play now, but it would be at a level that we probably have never seen. Given his
and see, what LeBron, what tells me he don't have that dog in him, is that you have a 6'9", 270-pound cat with no post game.
That's right.
If he had some dog in him, he had that beast in him. You know what I mean? When you got that beast in you, you're like, I'm going to bruise this young cat. I'm going to bruise this smaller player. You know, and in order to do that, I got to have a post game. If it's not Akeem, it's more Shaq than Akeem, where I'm just gonna body you real quick and go get my points, and you're just going to have to live with it. You know? LeBron plays like a guard.
That's right.
He plays like a guard, you know. And for a guy that size, you got to have a little bit more beast in you, you know. You got to have a little bit more beast in you where it's like, okay, yeah, if I get a bigger guy on me, I can outquick him. If I get a little guy on me, I can just do what I want to do on the block. But he doesn't have that, you know. He's still, like I said, and I ain't taking nothing away from his game. Dude's still an unstoppable force. You know, he's still hard. He's still got a mismatch almost every night he steps on the court. But there's just something missing. And, you know, everything that's happened has kind of put a little bit of a flashlight on it. And, you know, now it's out there to be seen, you know. And the other thing about LeBron that kills me is, man, this dude, his just wanting to be famous, his wanting to be liked, his wanting to be admired, Like, he don't stand for nothing. Like, he come out a couple weeks ago and say what he said. He tweeted whatever he tweeted about the Cavaliers. Cool, you tweeted that, man. That's how you feel. It is what it is. And then all of a sudden, oh, I didn't tweet that. I didn't mean it that way. Like, dude, man, what do you believe in? What did you try to, you know, he had the statements about contraction. You know, he's talking about he wants the league to get smaller. Two days later, that's not what I meant. I don't even know what the word contraction means. You know what I'm saying? It's like, dude, what do you stand for? Either shut up or say what's on your mind. But every time somebody has a problem with what you say, don't retract your statement, man. And, you know, when it comes to speaking out and having a voice in the media, Ali, to me, is the prototype of how that should go. Him and Jim Brown are the prototypes of how that should go. If people agree with you or disagree with you, say what you believe and keep it moving. You know, when you start flip-flopping and you know, waffling on what you stand on or what you stand for, what you had to say or what you didn't say, especially with the means of communication nowadays, it's all there. You know, you put that on Twitter, it's there. You know, you say it in an article, it's written. You say it to a reporter, it's there.
That's right.
You know, and so to then go back and say, that's not what I meant, that's not what, then why'd you say it? You knew the reporter was right there. You know who you are. You know it's going to get taken a certain kind of way. So if you're going to say something, say what you mean and let it be said. Let it be, you know, as they say, break it down and let it forever be broke.
And I think what he hasn't learned, he thought he did from what happened with Cleveland. And like Barclay said, 50% of the people don't like you and 50% gonna love you. And the brand is how loud those 50% of people that like you celebrate you. You know, you're not gonna have, you know, and what are you gonna give up to get to the ultimate brand? You know, winning can get you $1 billion in this market. You know, if you can get into China, you can get into some of these other large markets who respond to winning, you can be that billionaire athlete that you're talking about. You know, Tiger certainly was up on that level. And, you know, he failed messing around and creeping around. But I think what you said about the post game was exactly what I – you know what I said about it. I said, Cat has no – and he ain't even interested in developing the game. Because if he developed that, if this got real doggish at it, that's like I said, that's like running the football at the end of the game. What you going to do with him down in the post? You're going to have to follow
him. Nothing.
You know, if you're going to have to follow him, and he can pass out the post, it keeps him, especially with this team he has now, if he's down in the post, that opens the game up so much. It allows Wade to be the slasher. It allows Bosh, who likes to spot up and shoot Jays. You know, it can be more of an inverted kind of thing. It allows Bosh to get in his comfort zone. There's so much you could do off of it if he would be a willing post player. If he just had that, you know, we in the fourth quarter, and I'm just going to do what I do. And if you bad enough, get on down here. And if you bring somebody light in the pants, they getting dominated.
Yep.
Go to the free throw line, you know, I'm going to score, or I'm going to find somebody slashing to the hoop. Open man on a double team, you know, and it makes it really hard for them to double team him. He can see everything coming. So it's you're right, but his unwillingness to develop that aspect where Jordan really understood that, and Kobe, if you think about it, the people we try to compare him to, they were willing in developing that. I mean, Kobe's ability to post and his presence and his aggressiveness and how physically he posts, he developed it over time, but he got it. And, you know, Jordan developed that. I mean, that's how they won games down the stretch. And, you know, they didn't always get right down on the block. They got, you know, in that intermediate post area. But someone like, you know, LeBron can get right down there on the block, and then what are you going to do with him? What are you going to do with him down there on that block at the size he is? And so you're right. To not have that aggressiveness, not have that, like, I'm a finish you attitude. I got to develop this aspect of the game. If I do this, y'all ain't no way y'all can stop us. He ain't got that kind of by any means necessary.
Right.
And in some ways, that's a tribute to his talent. That he don't have that dog, but he's so talented, he can mask it.
Right. Well, I think the other part of it is, you know, when he does get a smaller player on him, he goes at him, but he goes at him with a guard mentality. Like, I'm just going to attack the basket off the dribble. You know, but I think having that post game just allows you to grind out those half-court buckets down the stretch at the end of games. And honestly, I think if he had a post game, it would end all conversation about who's going to be the go-to guy down the stretch for the Heat. You know, because when you have three guys and two of those guys get their buckets the same way, then you have another guy who is, you know, on certain nights he's going to be the guy. If LeBron had a post game, he would be the guy every night. And it would wrap that conversation up. You're going to go to LeBron down the stretch. Why? Because he can take it. He can get you the closest. He can get you the closest bucket. And if they double team, he's the best passer, possibly in the league. But he don't. So I mean,
and I think that's part of it. He's going to have to figure out what he wants. I mean, that's where he gets exposed is in the big moment. Because by driving in, playing like a guard, you know, someone's like, he's actually making himself smaller. He's playing small and then giving the advantage back to that defender. So, you know, if you're being defended by, you know, obviously a lot of times by a smaller player, you know, playing with your face to the basket is going to make that player, you play a lot into that player. The only strength they got is quickness. They can disrupt you. They can do a lot of things. You're not putting them at the major disadvantage and utilizing your size. So I mean, we'll see how as he develops. You know, is he gonna maybe change the way he plays the game for a championship? Because for me, he plays a game that my whole Sonic. He got that Sonic mentality with Gary Payton and those guys. He plays what I call a regular season game style. And it looks good in some play, but when they get into the big moment, whether it's the finals or the conference finals or NBA finals, it gets exposed by more talented teams, you know. And so it's a style that plays on a Tuesday night, moving to a Wednesday night, because you're not playing, you know, you're not playing Boston, best of seven, where they ain't going to just let him have it. So, you know, he's got to start developing a playoff-style game, like you're talking about, that you know, may look ugly for him on some nights during the regular season, but come the playoffs, it's going to help him finish people. And so, you know, I mean, I think that's where that's going to be important.
Yeah. That's just my LeBron take for the week. You know, I gotta check in on my LeBron folks every now and then to get my opinion on how my man is doing and how he's progressing. The other interesting thing was, did you see Durant call out Bosh? I love that. That was hilarious to me. Because neither one of those cats is really is striking me as a fist throwing type. You know what I mean? But it was. I think it says a little bit about how Kevin Durant feels about his stature in the league, and I think it also says a bit about how other teams are viewing some of these cats on this that trio out of Miami, which is interesting as well, because Durant calling a tough guy was funny, because Durant was real nice. He was real nice. He was like, you know, he expressed what he had to say, and I expressed what I had to say. And I felt like he was being, you know, so in our league we have some fake tough guys, and he's one of them. You know, it's like when he was in Toronto, he wasn't playing the tough role. He gets on a new team and he's winning some games, and now all of a sudden he's tough. So I thought that kind of cracked me up, that whole exchange. But I think I like to see that out of Durant as a young star, kind of stepping up and being more vocal on the court and being like, look, I'm talking to my teammate. You need to step away from our conversation. I can tell him whatever I want to tell him, whether you like it or not. If you say something about it, I'm going to say something back to you. Yeah, you know, I don't mind that.
And to me, that's the killer that we're talking about. Durant has that dog in me. He weigh about 125. He's got that dog in me. He's going to get there. He's going to try to fight. He might get knocked out, but he ain't going to be all hard getting knocked out.
Yeah.
He's going to come up there with something. I'm like, he's straight legit on his. I was so happy. I said, okay, way to go, young boy. Let them know. Let them know. We have no place for counterfeit champions.
Don't
come up that like you got that bad boy mentality. You just keep it to yourself, keep walking, you know, and follow LeBron and Wade to the locker room. In that trash, I'm gonna go for 40 on you. So I like that. My question to you, I'm looking at, how can you deny Kevin Love, man?
Yeah.
He got like 42 double-double. We talking about all-star stuff. How can you deny? We want your report card before we move. You know we got to spend some time on the Super Bowl at some point. And that's going to be the bulk of our conversation. But, you know, the NBA is bubbling up right now. And I know we're going to need your report card. But how can you deny? I know there's a lot of great players. I know you're talking about Aldridge and a lot of people out west. But how can you deny this kid with 42 double-doubles?
You know, it's really hard, man. I was looking at the potential all-star rosters. And people in China, I know, I probably ain't got nobody in China listening, but who knows? Maybe some Chinese people are listening to this show. Stop home for Yao Ming. Don't y'all know he ain't played but like six games this season? He don't deserve to be no all-star.
That's a flaw in the NBA.
It is. It really is. It always has been, man.
You cannot. This is not an all-star game if they're voting Yao Ming to the starting lineup. I mean, you can't do this. A cat wing never play. There's got to be a clause.
Yes.
I think there has to be
a game limit. You have to have played in a certain percentages of your team's games. Otherwise, you're ineligible, I think. Because it happened to me. I came to this realization when I was probably like, I don't know, man, like 14 or 15. And Penny Hardaway had played maybe like 17 games in a season. And I think it was a year after Shaq left, so maybe it was like 96, 97. And he was voted a starter in the All-Star game, and he played. And I was like, dude, you haven't played all season, and now you're playing in the All-Star game? And at that point, I was like, oh, this is not right. You can't have a guy who's barely played any games for his own team showing up to the All-Star game and playing as a starter because the fans voted him in. You know, to me, at that point, I was kind of done with the whole fans voting system, and this whole Yao Ming thing has just brought up some of those bad memories of how it just makes no sense to how the fans do the voting for the starters. I get it. I understand. You want the fans. But sometimes there needs to be some checks and balances. Yes, you want the fans to have some power, but there need to be some checks and balances to maintain the integrity and value of the award itself of being named to the All-Star team.
Yeah, it has to be something. I mean, maybe reconfigure the percentages of the fan votes along with player votes and coaches' vote, you know, something like that that creates that, you know, so that allows you to get the most effective people in that year. But come up with a different form of that that takes the fans and gives the fans some value. But we can't have our Chicago style voting.
Yeah, man. We just need a straight. Maybe just do what Goodell would do. You know what Goodell would do?
Yeah.
Goodell would say, "I got veto. At the end of the day, I got veto power. And if the fans say don't make no sense, I'm gonna veto that.
Yeah.
And I reserve the right to veto any All-Star nomination that doesn't make sense. Because in this age of the internet, it's only we only a couple clicks away for somebody to put together a campaign to vote. You know, Popeye Jones into the All-Star game, somebody like that, man. All we are is one Facebook campaign away from some crazy happening with a sporting events All-Star game, you know, with opening it up to the fans voting. You know, we're a well-coordinated movement away from that. With everything that's popping off in Egypt, you see how quickly people can mobilize with the communication abilities and capabilities that people have nowadays, so... yeah, you know, the whole Yao Ming thing. But in the West, it's so loaded with forwards, man. I mean, you take Yao Ming out, and maybe you plug in Pau Gasol as the starting center or Dirk Nowitzki as the starting center. Then from there, I mean, you got whichever one you don't take. Let's say you plug Pau in, then you got Dirk. Okay, that's one spot. Then you got, it's hard to keep Blake out. Given everything that's going on there, then do you bring in Timmy? You gotta find a spot for Timmy.
I mean,
Even though Timmy is not playing at his usual level, his team is the number one team in the league, and he's a big part of that. You know,
I can take Tim over y'all. Man, y'all may have to soak his feet some Epsom salt. So,
weekly, nightly. Every night he's taking an Epsom salt bath.
Go see, like Richard Pryor said, Miss Rudolph. Soak his feet, Miss Rudolph.
Seriously. Seriously. Then you got a guy like LaMarcus Aldridge. You got Zach Randolph, who seems like he's deserving this year. It's just loaded with forwards in the West. The West has always been kind of power forward heavy in particular. But, I mean, his team is so damn bad. and that's Kevin Love. His team is so terrible. And, you know, it almost seems like they shouldn't be that bad.
Yeah.
You know, they have some guys who you think should be able to play at this level. And Beasley and Corey Brewer and Wesley Johnson and Luke Ridnour and Johnny Flynn. It just doesn't seem like they have any cohesion, though. They even getting good minutes out of Darko, which I thought was impossible.
Yeah,
but it just doesn't seem like they know what the hell is going on the basketball. They don't know what each other is doing. They don't know what the other team is doing. They just seem very chaotic. But it's not affecting his play. I mean, he's having a season for the ages, really. I mean, I didn't see this coming. I thought he was a good player.
Yeah.
I thought he would be at best in his career, you know, a 15 and 10 guy, like a Troy Murphy type, you know, get you 14 and 10. He could shoot out to the three, you know, be a nice passer. But I never saw this coming. I mean, this is some crazy type stuff. This is some video game numbers he's putting up as far as rebounding and scoring goes. I mean, this is pretty daggone amazing.
Yeah, he got it. He's got great hands. I just like the way he outlets the ball when he's at UCLA. He's got good fundamentals. Yeah, but I was wondering whether or not he had, you know, that the quickness and the ability to do it. But he's doing the old school stuff. You know, and the thing about it is he's doing it in terms, especially from a rebounding standpoint. Well, he's so much the focal point of the offense, and he's hitting J's. He's got spacing, so he's not like a specialist like a Rodman where he's just fighting for position while somebody else is shooting and just being better at, I mean, getting at the ball. I mean, he's an active part of the offense, and sometimes he's away from the hoop, and he's still getting rebounds. So, I mean, that right there, you know, says a lot about this kid's development.
Yeah, and the franchise is going all out for him. You know, they got the commercial and everything, you know, the numbers cologne. Have you seen that? Yeah, they got a little commercial for him, man. Look it up, the Kevin Love numbers. Kevin Love numbers. They got a fragrance for him that they sending out to people who are voting for the All-Star team. So campaign the franchise has got going. It's pretty, it's a funny little commercial. It's a slick little spot. But go ahead.
I'm looking at that and Blake is playing incredibly well. Like you said, that West is loaded. You know, whoever gets left off, you know, it's gonna be a shame. But you know, nothing you can do about it.
Yeah. So why don't we go ahead and get into breaking this whole thing down right now? We're about halfway through the season, headed into the All-Star break. Why don't we get into it and let's take a look at just how things are shaping up. We'll start with the East, you know, to the East, my brother, to the East. We'll start with the Eastern Conference. You know, if I had to handicap the East and pick my two favorites to be playing in the Eastern Conference Finals, I'm going with Chicago and Boston. The Heat are going to be there at the end. Orlando will be hanging around. Those top four teams, I think, are going to be in the chase. And honestly, if you're the NBA, you really can ask for more. You got Boston relevant. You got Chicago relevant. Even New York and Philly are kind of climbing back into it. So you got your major franchises being relevant again. So this is going to be a real nice stretch run into the playoffs. And then the playoffs, I think, is just going to be real fun to watch this year. But those four teams, Orlando, Chicago, Miami, and Boston, I think are going to be the teams that wind up fighting it out. And any combination of those teams in a seven-game series, I'm cool with watching. You know, that, I think that's just going to be a treat for NBA fans to either see, you know, Boston going against Orlando and then Chicago going against Miami. That's going to be some fun. That's going to make May a lot of fun, man. That's going to make May a lot of fun. But I like Boston and Chicago. I like Boston's depth. They've played very well through injuries. Rondo missed a lot of games. Perkins missed the majority of the first half of the season. Jermaine O'Neal's whole knee issue worries me a little bit because that knocks away some of that depth that they have on the interior. But I think they can compensate for that with getting Perkins back and still having Shaq. They just have to monitor Shaq's minutes. Then they still got Delonte West, who they haven't really incorporated into what they do. So they got a lot of pieces that they haven't really got going yet. And then they got guys like Nate Robinson, Big Baby's having a career year, Marquise Daniels playing well in spots off the bench. And then they got the one foreign cat, Semi Erden, who's also a big guy who's given a minute and who's actually been able to start a few games and be somewhat effective in limited time, of course. He's been somewhat effective playing in the post. So that gives them another post guy. So Boston is loaded. To me, they're the favorite right now. As of today, right today, Boston is the favorite, is my favorite to win it all. Just because I think they're loaded. They have a guy who can break you down in Rondo. They got a guy you can ISO in Paul Pierce. They got a guy who can shoot it off of screens in Ray Allen. And they got a guy you can throw it into in the post with KG. And then they have enough big bodies to bang with you. So I like Boston a lot. And I like what they're doing. And Doc knows how to get his team going for the playoffs. He knows how to manage minutes. He knows how to make sure that they're hitting on all cylinders right when it's time. And, you know, they're the team to beat in the East. And I think in the league right now, because they have that experience advantage, and I think they just have that. They have such a deep roster. And then, you know, I like Chicago out of the East. And I like Chicago for a similar reason. They've been playing well hurt for a long time. And I think when Noah comes back, Noah getting hurt I felt like was a blessing in disguise almost, because it allowed them to get Kurt Thomas some run, get Taj Gibson some more minutes and keep him in the flow. It allowed them to acclimate Boozer into everything that they're doing. And then it also allowed them to cat from off the bench, Omer Asik or whatever. I think he's Turkish. It allowed them to give him some meaningful minutes to kind of bolster their front court depth. Because you know me, my philosophy, and looking at how all this is going to play out is you got to have big. You got to be able to rebound. You got to be able to defend the post. You got to be able to single cover people, and you got to have somebody that commands a double team. If you got those two things, you got a shot. If you don't have those two things, you're running a race uphill. And Boozer can play on the block, and he can get you baskets. And Derrick Rose right now is the MVP. I don't know how you feel about that, but Derrick Rose is my first half of the season MVP, hands down. He's been clutch. He's been consistent. You know, there's not a whole lot they can ask for him. And I was thinking about this, too, the other day. There was actually a debate 3 years ago as to whether he should have been the first pick or Michael Beasley should have been the first pick, which in hindsight is 2020. But just think of where Chicago would be if they had taken Beasley. You know, it would be a very different situation.
Yeah, I want to ask you, and we're getting the Game Changers mid-season report, which you can say this is thorough. This is what I love about the Game Changer. Marcus this is PhD level stuff. This is for the real hoop heads that he's giving you this stuff now. There's a team that by record, they look impressive, but I didn't hear them as much in your evaluation. I may have missed a little bit of Atlanta. What's your thought about what's happening with Atlanta? With the changes and things like that. I mean, because you look at Atlanta and they're, you know, they're sitting at 30-18 right now. They've had some impressive victories. You know, they've been playing well on the road. They're like 15-11 on the road. You know, they're 7-2 in their division, 21-9 in the conference. Look like they're playing pretty good defense, only allowing about 95 points a game. You know, some of the things that they weren't doing, they appear to be developing a little bit more of an offense and continuity. That's not coming down like his rec gym, you know, and whoever gets the highlight. So give me your assessment. If you were to look outside those top tier, you know, a team like Atlanta, maybe another team that you think, you know, they're not doing well now, but if they pull some things together, they can make a run.
Yeah, Atlanta, I see in that. Like, I think there's Boston, Chicago, Miami as the elite contenders in the East. And then there's Orlando, Atlanta, and New York, that next three. And I could easily see Atlanta interchange with Orlando. The reason I don't like Atlanta as much is because I don't like their size. They don't have enough size. They don't have enough solid, good post players. And then I don't like their – like, Atlanta is to me, a poor man's Miami, almost. They have a lot of good perimeter players. They have decent size. Horford is developing. He's a good big man, but he's more of a power forward, and they have him playing center. And that puts him at a disadvantage in the playoffs. But the reason I call them kind of a poor man's Miami is because Miami is weak at the point guard and at the five. And Atlanta is the same way. They're going to be at a disadvantage at the point guard spot because Bibby, though he's still somewhat effective offensively, defensively he's not where he used to be. He doesn't have the foot speed and the quickness. And Jeff Teague ain't ready yet. And then in the post, Horford is solid, but Horford is undersized. And so that puts him at a disadvantage most nights against a Dwight Howard. If it's Horford versus Chicago and Boozer and Noah, I'm taking Chicago's front line. You know, Miami, if I got to pick three perimeter players against Atlanta's three perimeter players, I'm taking Miami's three perimeter players. And then, you know, again, those are the two same teams. Miami's got more talent. And then if they're going against Boston, they have no shot. I think Boston would just run right through Atlanta. So that's what, you know, Atlanta's a good team. I just don't think, unless they can make a move, they got Jamal Crawford. And honestly, if I was them, I'd consider moving Marvin Williams. Marvin Williams still, in some people's eyes, still has some value as a potential guy who could turn it around in the right situation and be an elite player. But again, coming out of Carolina, they took him number two in the draft. He was supposed to be a stud, and he hasn't been. And, you know, I think he got into a fight the other night. You know how NBA fights go. They're usually not that great. Occasionally, it's a good NBA fight, but this was a run-of-the-mill NBA fight. A couple punches were thrown. Nobody hit anything. You know, they was playing against the Knicks, but, yeah, and I like to see that, too. Throw a couple punches. It's all good. You guys are professionals. Who cares if a couple millionaires knock each other's teeth out? It's all good. But yeah, you know, if they can move maybe a Williams or even a Teague, who's a young prospect who seems to have some potential, but he just hasn't quite figured it out in this particular system. If they can move Teague, maybe move Jamal Crawford, who has an expiring contract. If they can move some of those players, I think maybe they could make a move. Hell, you know, me, you and I were talking off air about the Lakers, trying to make a trade and possibly moving Andrew Bynum. If they could pick up a piece like Andrew Bynum in Atlanta, you know, in exchange for a Jeff Teague, maybe a Marvin Williams, and, you know, a Jamal Crawford, that would be worthwhile. You know, that may be worthwhile. I don't know if it would be worthwhile for the Lakers because they wouldn't get a big in return. They would get some wing help and some perimeter help. But, you know, that may be worthwhile, you know, for them to look into trying to acquire another big. If they can get a legitimate center, then I would view them a little bit differently. But not having that, I ain't buying Atlanta going very far. They'll compete. They'll be tough. They'll make for a good series. They'll make for a good show. But I just don't see very much. I think that team is about a year away from maxing out as far as it can go, and then they'll have to blow that up and figure out what to do. And they still should have never gave Joe Johnson all that money.
Yeah, we talked about that in terms of you know, and I mean, you name some things that they could help them kind of turn the corner, because it's like they're, you know, again, they're built for the regular season, not necessarily built to win in the playoffs. And you know, they're a tough cover if you got to play them on a back to back. You know, you have, you know, or you know, on that regular season, just getting ready for the athleticism. You know, they're going to struggle against, you know, maybe some of the top tier teams. You know, if they get a good favorable matchup, you know, if they get matched up with, you know, I mean, in some ways they could give Miami some issues because they can match up athletically. They don't have the experience on the finisher, but they got the athletes, and Miami doesn't have anybody really guarding that rim. They can get it to rim. But they could be a matchup problem for Miami if they have that effect. If they end up with Boston would just shred them, as you said. The other thing that happened in the East is, you know, with Jim O'Brien, was that in Indiana?
Yeah,
the Pacers, and that's a team that's got some interesting parts. You know, they're not ready now, but it's just like, okay, what's happening? They got some young talent. They got some pieces there. You know, in there. I mean, how would you assess them? I don't see them making a challenge, but if you thought about their future, you know, that's a team with the right coach and a couple moves could be. And they got, you know, Hibbert. They got some pieces there that just don't seem to be all coming together.
Yeah, they got. I think O'Brien leaving was the first shoe to drop. The management regime in Indiana.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they got a lot of lottery picks who haven't panned out from Hansborough to, you know, Hibbert, who are guys who are showing that they can play at this level and play well in the NBA, but they're not doing it on a consistent basis. And I saw, you know, I think Bird is, his clock is running. And then, you know, they've got to figure out what Danny Granger is going to be. You know, is he going to be a franchise guy? If not, can they move? And he's another piece. If I'm the Lakers, you know, I go check him out, you know, because if the Lakers could swing, that would be like a Pau Gasol type steal if they can get a guy of Danny Granger's caliber to come and run that wing out there in L.A. You know, even if it does mean giving up a Bynum, you know, that could be a major get for them. You know, and maybe they pick up a Jeff Foster, somebody like that, who could be a solid big, you know, who could just give them some minutes behind Gasol and Odom. That would be a major, major move to get that slasher on the wing that they seem to be needing right now with Artest not playing the way he is and Ariza being in New Orleans. But the Indiana roster, you're right, they have some good parts. They have some pieces. Collison's a nice point guard. Paul George, the kid from Fresno State, when he gets minutes, he plays well. And he's kind of a similar type of player to Danny Granger, which I think is what's giving them more impetus to move Danny Granger, or to at least put his name out there and allow people to kind of see, you know, throw something against the wall and see what sticks. Hibbert's a solid player. I've always liked Roy Hibbert. You know, I've always been a big fan of Georgetown basketball, and I watched him play when he was in college, and I really liked his game, and I felt he was a real cerebral player, and he would do well when he got to the league, and he has done fairly well. He could do a little bit better. This team is still not out of the playoffs. Those last two spots in the East, after you get past New York, are totally up for grabs. I mean, Detroit's put themselves kind of back in the mix. If New Jersey were to get hot, they could find themselves in the mix. Milwaukee's still hanging around, which is another team that's really scary. If they get healthy and they get that chemistry, it's been a rough year for them. You know, they have high expectations for Milwaukee. Jennings, I heard. Simmons has been hurt. Bogut has been in and out of the lineup. So having those players miss all that time has really stunted their growth as a team. And Indiana's right there. Indiana's right there in the mix. And I think that's also why they kind of made that move. This team needs to make a run. Tyler Hansbrough has showed pretty well when he's gotten a chance to play. So they got some pieces. I mean, hell, they even getting production out of Josh McRoberts, who I never thought would be an NBA caliber player. But, you know, he's starting and he's being productive for them. So they got some talent. Again, they're going to have a lot of cap space in the next couple of summers. pulling people into Indiana may be hard. And that's really it's really going to be interesting to see how free agency plays out over the next, you know, 3 or 4 summers, because Indiana, markets like Indiana, Milwaukee, you know, Charlotte, when you got New York doing well, when you got Philly looking decent, now that they're starting to hit their stride, when you got Chicago, Miami, and Boston all being successful, plus you have a good team in L.A., a good team in Dallas, you know, you have all these marquee markets with good teams, and the Clippers coming up, you know, so that's another big market team that is coming up and is on the come up. It's going to be hard for places like Indiana and Detroit and New Jersey, as we've seen with the whole Carmelo saga, and Denver and Memphis. And, you know, some of these smaller markets, some of these kind of second, third-tier markets in the league, how are they going to be able to get guys to come and play there even though they're going to have cap space? You know, like Carmelo is staying away from New Jersey, like they got the plague out there. He wants no part of New Jersey, you know. And I think, you know, Indiana's going to have a lot of cap space because they have some expiring deals coming off their books. I don't know how attractive that it's going to look to live in Indianapolis and play for the Pacers. You know, the money talks, but I think with this generation of players, they're thinking about quality of life. They're thinking about marketing opportunities. They're thinking beyond just give me a check and I'll take whatever I can get on the court. They're looking at off-the-court ventures. They're looking at, you know, you have a generation of guys who've learned from the Jordan model of how to build yourself up as a business and understand yourself as a business. They've learned from that Jordan model and they're looking for a platform to grow. So I don't know how attractive Indiana will be, but they got some pieces. It'll just be figuring out how to continue to develop those young guys and then how to make the right moves to add some pieces that are going to help. Again, if they can get a dynamic, you know, they have Brandon Rush, who's decent, but they can get another dynamic wing player either by keep Granger or moving Granger and bringing in somebody else. I think that would help them out a lot.
But they got some people on their roster that's stealing. They got James Posey making $7 million. They got Dunleavy making $10 million.
Yeah, you know,
I mean,
and, but those deals are gonna be coming off the books in a minute. So.
I know, but can we call the police? Can we call the FBI?
Hey, you know how them Dunleavys do, man. You know how them Dunleavys do. Mike Dunleavy Sr. was stealing from the Clippers for a couple years, not showing up to coach. You know, T.J. Ford is stealing money out there too. T.J. Ford is a piece that, you know, I know he has an attitude issue, and he had an attitude issue when he was in Milwaukee, which was well documented in basketball circles here in Wisconsin. But, you know, if they could move a guy like T.J. Ford,
he makes 8.5.
He could help a team out, though. You know, if it's
4-5-3s, can I get? I just want 50,000 in a Cadillac. Can I get?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, they do have some guys on this roster who are cuffing some checks. You know, but that's all. Though a lot of those guys are coming off the books this year too. So I mean, they're gonna have a lot of money to spend. Like I said, you know, they got a lot of talent. They got a lot of talent with Hansborough and Hibbert.
Yeah.
Paul George, I like him a lot.
Yeah.
Collison's a good player.
Yeah.
McRobert seems to be figuring things out. So Brandon Rush has been solid when he's played, but they're gonna have to make some decisions on some of these other guys.
Yeah, because it's like I ain't never seen 3 Duke players on one roster.
You know, that's always an omen. You know, that's always an omen. That's never a good look when you got that many Duke guys on the roster.
Man, I never see that many Duke players on a roster.
Well, man, this roster, man, you know, the malice and the palace really messed up the Pacers, man. Because, you know, if you recall, you know, back in the day, man, the Pacers have never had 3 consecutive losing seasons.
Yeah.
They're about to go on their 4th if they can't turn this season around right now. And you know, they were perennially in it. You know, it may not have been a surefire contender, but they were in the mix. They were in the conversation. You know, if they weren't in the conversation, they were right there on that next tier, trying to make, knocking on the door. And the Malice in the Palace really just, it really set the franchise back about 4 or 5 years. Because, you know, you had that incident, and then you had the Steven Jackson, you know, shooting guns in the club, and you had Jamal Tinsley. And, I mean, basically, I mean, Larry Bird was given a charge of, I need the safest, the ownership was, we need the safest roster you can get us. And they basically tried to be Utah East, almost, yeah, with just having a real white team, to be yeah, blunt about it. You know, they basically had one of the whitest teams you've ever seen in the NBA.
We going to run the picket fence. We going to run the picket fence.
For real. And this ain't Hoosiers. This ain't Hoosiers. But they tried, man. And they're kind of coming out of that a little bit and kind of getting back to, let's just get some good ball players now. But for a while, they really tried to stay away from bad attitude kind of players.
And they said the word on the street is Mike Brown, who was an assistant there, is a front runner for that job. And I think Mike, this would be a good fit for Mike.
I think so, too.
He got a bad shaft in Cleveland. I just think he's a real good coach. And
yeah, thanks, LeBron.
Yeah, thanks, Bron. Another one. Coach Killer.
Watch your back, Spoelstra.
But I think he would do, if he bring him in to kind of shore things up and, you know, and tighten that defense up and get some things going, I think he might be a good fit there in Indianapolis. But, you know, like you said, I mean, those bottom two spots are for grabs in the East. How
are
you looking at the West? How the West
was fun. Man, the West, you know, the Spurs are just a classy organization, man. I mean, they got that Patriot type of culture, that New England Patriot type of culture where it's like, you come in here, we do things a certain way. You know, we got Tuesday night Bible study, you got to go. You know what I'm saying? You know, they just have a certain way of bringing guys in who are going to fall in line, and they bring in guys who they know are going to fit with what they do. And if you don't fit with what they do, they let you go. They know what they are, they know who they are, and they stick to it, man. That's why when you look around the league, man, so many other front offices are plucking their guys, you know, are snatching up their guys and using them to build their rosters and build their organization up. Because they have a system, and you know, we talked about this last week a little bit when we talked about Mike Tomlin and how, you know, one measure of a coach is how many guys under him eventually go on and be successful. It's the same thing with San Antonio in that front office. You know, there are a lot of guys throughout the league who got their start in San Antonio who are successful and who are doing well and who are being hired and rehired and. So, I mean, that speaks to just the culture of what they do. And they just keep on ticking, man. Tony Parker's having a great year. Manu is doing his thing. He's healthy for once. And I think we kind of got cheated with Manu, man. I mean, we kind of missed some of his prime years, you know, because of injury and because of limited minutes. But Manu's a beast.
Oh, yeah.
That dude's a hell of a player. He's fun to watch, too.
He'll cross you over and you know, and you know, and Eva's gone. You know, I think that's freeing Tony up a little bit to get back to him, to his the way he played the game.
Mm-hmm.
He ain't got to look to the sidelines anymore.
Yeah,
at all. But yeah, they run it. I mean, they got. I mean, and they got the, you know, the bench players and the depth they built. You know, Blair, who is, you know, you look at it, he's not really a steal, but you know, he's undersized, but he's just doing his thing. I mean, Pop finds a way to get something out of those players. I think you're right. You know, that Patriots, that Steelers, you know, that finding that, you know you're always going to have a late draft pick, but finding that value.
Mm-hmm.
Finding those free agents, finding those international players, finding those things, that finding those guys who fit your system, who are going to buy in and come in and play. And the Spurs, you're right. I mean, I think, you know, they're the Cadillac. You see them, you know, it's kind of like, Are they fool's gold?
I actually think they are a little bit. And I'll tell you why.
I'll wait for your buck.
Yeah, and I'll tell you why. Like, I love what they're doing, but unless Tiago Splitter, unless they get somebody else other than Timmy, who I just don't think they're big enough. I think if you put them up against the Lakers, even with the way the Lakers roster is right now, I'm going with the Lakers in a seven-game series.
Yeah.
If you go matchup for matchup, roster for roster, as much talent as San Antonio has and as much young – they have some good young players, but, you know, I think their best young players are perimeter guys with George Hill and Gary Neal. Blair is an effective player, but Blair is not the type of big you want to roll into the playoffs with. You don't want to roll into a playoffs with a 6'7 big going up against 7'1, 7 foot, and a 6'10 front line, you know, which is the Lakers. And all you got is Duncan, a 6'7 cat, a 6'9 guy who's about 36, and then, you know, Splitter. So if Splitter can show some signs of life, that he can play in this league and he can be an effective player at either end of the court, my opinion on San Antonio would change. I think they're doing great now because I think they're relying on the young guys, and the young guys are doing very well and they're playing well. But I do think they're a bit of fool's gold at this point. I just can't quite buy into their interior options, their interior plays. This doesn't really impress me right now. Duncan's a beast. He will always be a beast. He's probably the greatest, if not one of the top two power forwards ever to play the game. But he's on the downside of his career. And whether or not he can have the impact that he's had in the past in a seven-game series, I'm not sure, especially when you're going up against the Lakers. Really, the Lakers are still the team to beat, in my opinion, because no one else in the West, you know, Dallas's front line is formidable to an extent, but no one else in the West has a legitimate front line that can challenge the Lakers' size right now. And, you know, Mitch Kupchak came out talking about he might have to look at a trade to shake things up a little bit. We'll see. I mean, again, the only chip they got that anybody would want is Bynum. I mean, I don't see any GM jumping up and down to get their hands on really anybody else off that roster who would possibly be available unless they make Odom available. And even then, Odom is such a hard chip to move, and not because nobody would want him, but he's just so damn difficult to replace. I mean, you ain't going to find another 6'10 cat who can handle the ball, pass like he passes, and still rebound, and can score. Shoot the three-pointer. It's hard to replace that, you know. So Bynum seems like he's the only piece that they could move, and what they need to get in return in regards to the Lakers is, I think, some fresh perimeter legs. They need some fresh legs on the wing. Some explosiveness on the wing. I think Artest is going to be ready come playoff time. I think he's going to get in his groove. You know, as long as he can guard Paul Pierce, as long as he can guard LeBron, you know, as long as he can guard those two, as long as he's ready to guard those two dudes, he didn't earn his check. You know, in the regular season, he just needs to start to get into a rhythm. He does seem checked out. You know, you and I talked about that off air. He does seem a little checked out. But, you know, maybe he's spending too much time with his shrink. You know, he need that edge. Ron needs his edge, man. And that's, you know, you got to have a little bit of crazy on your team, you know. And that's what he brought last year. He brought that little bit of crazy. You know, he might need to lose his shrink phone number for a week or two and see if he don't start to play a little bit better. Dallas is Dallas, man. Dallas is decent. They're always in it. I just, you know, one thing I will say, though, Dirk, in the same way LeBron is kind of one of those once-in-a-generation talents, Dirk is the same type of once-in-a-generation talent. I mean, when you think about what Dirk Nowitzki is, he's the greatest 7-foot shooter ever. He is the greatest 7-foot shooter ever. You know, he's one of those guys where you watch him and you don't appreciate him because he hasn't won a championship. He hasn't had those big moments. But, I mean, the dude is consistent as hell. He's, like I said, he's probably the greatest 7-foot shooter ever. And the things that he does at his height, the shots that he can make, and just the way he plays the game and the way he gets shots, the way he creates space, is so unique and unorthodox. It's really fun to watch, and it's really fun to pay attention to. So, you know, it's shout out to Dirk. You know, as much slack as he gets for being soft, dude is fun to watch. He's a very interesting player, and he is kind of a once-in-a-generation type of guy who you watch him play, and you can really watch him play and learn a lot watching him play about space and getting your shot off and all those kind of things. But Dallas is another team that, you know, is kind of fool's gold. They're doing great now in the regular season. I think they're probably the team that poses the biggest challenge to the Lakers, in my opinion. And part of that is because of Dirk, because he's such a mismatch for their bigs. And now with having a Tyson Chandler and a Brandon Haywood, and Chandler was a steal for them. He's been playing at the level he was playing with when he was in New Orleans a couple of years ago, where he's playing really well and he's starting to hit his stride now that he's healthy. The one thing I will say, man, is if you look at all of the guys that participated in that Team USA experience this past summer, they're all balling this year. And that experience, man, I think a lot of GMs are going to see that, because I think sometimes GMs shy away from having their players participate in international play because they don't get an opportunity to rest. They don't have a chance to, you know, they're worried about them getting injured and risking injury and all those kind of things. But, man, I mean, if you go down that roster, all of those guys are having career years. If not career years, they're having comeback years. They're having bounce back years. Like Odom, he's got a spring in his step that he hasn't had in a couple years. Chandler's back. Eric Gordon took a big step. Rose took a huge step. Durant is Durant. You know, Rudy Gay took a big step. Rondo's playing amazing ball right now. All of those guys that participated in that experience really have come out on the other side with a different swag, with a different confidence, and it's showing in their games, and it's showing in the impact that they're having on their teams. But, you know, that Dallas front line is the only front line I think really wrong with the Lakers.
And I want to say, because I think you made some important points about Dirk. And one of the things that people have to realize is Dirk can't do everything. So it's like, you know, he does so much for that team that he can't do everything. And like you said, I mean, 7 foot with handles, which is, I mean, I don't think people really understand when you watch him. I mean, he goes to his leg and a pull up on the jumper with his legs all crooked like Reggie Miller. Like,
yeah, he jumps off the wrong foot a lot.
And the other thing you talk about these players playing is what's great about it is the practice. I think that the opportunity to battle against competition and practice in a way that you wouldn't necessarily be able to do in your own off-season workouts, you're going to improve. You play with that level of competition every day in practice. You have a chance to go work out with somebody who is of equal ability. You're around people who really want to compete at a high level. So that feeds you. So you just, your saw is staying sharp at a time where you might drop off. Even though you're working in front to improve your game, you're never going to have those kind of workout partners all the time. Not everybody, you know, works out that way together. And I think that's what's so great about it is the practice time that you have together that allows you to sharpen your saw and add to your game. And you have a chance to get up close and personal with some of your peers and see things that they have. You know, basketball is a game of you steal. And so you're able to see something and evolve your game because you spend time around, you know, Chris Paul is watching something that Derrick Rose is doing or Rondo or whoever it might be. Anytime you're in these kind of situations, you can learn something from somebody in their game and say, "Damn, how'd you do that?"
Yeah,
and add that element to your game. So, and for a number of reasons, it's a good experience for players. And like you said, they're all balling.
Yeah,
Rudy Gay is trying to do this thing. You know, he's trying to run a case for himself to get in the All-Star game. I mean, all these cats are balling.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey. So I want to go back to the Lakers for a second real quick, because when we were talking off air, and we you and I were trying to look at potential trade partners, you know,
Phil,
with the trade talk.
Phil T hit me with a text. He was talking Hamilton and Tayshaun. He said he's about to go to bed, but he'd be with a text about it. So everybody throwing their 2 cents in on this Laker thing. So what are you going to say about the Lakers?
So I was looking. We were trying to look at trade partners, and I found the team that I think if I'm Kupchak, I get him on the line real quick because he could pull a Memphis like heist real quick. You know, this could be like Ocean's 12. You know, the first one was Ocean's 11. This could be like Ocean's 12. I would actually call up the Sacramento Kings, man. I want you to pull up their roster real quick.
Okay, yeah, I'm coming.
You know, if you can get a guy like Samuel Dellembert,
okay,
who got a big deal, but it's an expiring deal. You can get a guy like Samuel Dellembert and maybe pull a Francisco Garcia, maybe get a younger guy, or even if you go Garcia and you get a cat like Jason Thompson, who is 24, 6'11", 250. He can play a little bit inside, outside. You know, that's another piece to add. If the Lakers would just call up, Ms. Kupchak, if you're listening, call up Sacramento and see what they're talking about, man. See if they're not interested in buying them. You can move by them. You can stay young. You can get a cat like Dellembert. You can get a cat like Jason Thompson. Plus, you can get a wing player in Francisco Garcia, or you can try and get the Caspi cat, the Israeli dude who will play well in L.A. You know, or you can even try and be real sneaky, get one of those cats, and then throw in a guy like Dante Green, who I think at 6'11", 226, yeah, at 6'11", a wing player. If you put him under the tutelage of Lamar Odom, man, that's a cat who could turn out and be something for you as well. So I think that's a team with a lot of prospects that they don't know what to do with, and they have too many prospects, and they'd be willing to get rid of some of those guys if they can get a big name like Bynum that gives that franchise some cachet, you know, to go with DeMarcus Cousins and a Tyreek Evans. If you can give up some of those, because they got a lot of redundant parts.
Yeah. Even a guy like a Kyle Landry, who got like some battle dog in him.
Yeah, yeah.
A little bit of depth, you know, on there, and who's willing to get physical. You know, he'll be, you know, and play and can play in space. You know, this is a guy that might be good for a Boston series to battle Big Baby and some other folks, you know, around there. But just, you know, another piece. Yeah, they do got a lot of parts, you know, depending on.
Yeah, and they got a lot of redundant pieces, so I think they'd be willing to. They should be willing to move. So I mean, if they can move Dellembert, he's making $13 million. Talk about stealing money.
Oh my goodness.
He's making $13 million, but he's an expiring deal. So you know, if they could throw him, if they can get him off their books, get a piece like Bynum in Sacramento, you know, but then also maybe move another one of those redundant parts. You know, that could be amazing. Like I said, that could be Ocean's 12 for the Lakers.
Yeah,
you know, they could make a huge move right there. Get a couple young. They can get younger, you know, while getting a guy who can help them now. You know, in Dellembert, you know, a guy who can give them some solid minutes off the bench. He can block shots. He rebounds well when he gets time. You know, that could be a nice pickup for them.
Yeah, I mean, they got some. Because I mean, for them to be able to put a guy like Bynum with a guy like Cousins. And Cousins got some space, so he can play a little bit away from the basket.
Yeah.
The post. I mean,
and then to have Tyreek Evans, that's a hell of a trio, you know.
Yeah. And,
so, you know, if I'm Kupchak, get them loose on the phone.
Meet them out in Vegas.
Yeah, seriously. That's what they need to do. They need to move that team to Vegas.
They do.
I mean, again, in this climate of NBA where you have to be in a city that has that it's got some bright lights to really be a player, man, move the Kings to Vegas and watch that franchise turn around. Watch that franchise turn around. I mean, that'll be a hot spot for guys who want to go and play, you know, if that team's in Vegas as opposed to Sacramento. You know, and I know how much they mean in Sacramento. I know how much they mean to that community and to the livelihood of that community. So, you know, I'm cool with them being in Sacramento, but that team in Vegas would be nice.
I think the Malouz fan pushing forward.
I would be, man. I would be. I'd be calling Stern every day. Can we move to Vegas now? Can we do it? We got a facility.
Well, we rock it up here on Super Bowl Sunday.
Yes.
So what are we talking about? We got a lot on the table. Yeah, me.
Well, I'm gonna allow you the opportunity real quick, and we're gonna hear from D. Wills for a little bit now. the league has been trying, right? I'm going to say the league, but just to spin on the whole Super Bowl stories, they're trying to paint Ben as this redemption story. Before I give my opinion, I want to know, are you buying that?
I'm not really buying it because it takes a while, you know, as we've probably seen from Michael Vick. You know, it's not just about the play on the field. It's about the play in the life, in what you do off the field. And, I know he's getting married, I believe, and, those things. But, I mean, he has a lot. I mean, we all go through traumatic experiences that make us realize we can lose something. And people thought Rooney's were joking when they're talking about moving. They're moving. And so I think he was shook up, but I think he got a long way to go. And we'll learn more in the off season. We'll learn more. So I think he's probably redeemed himself within the locker room, but in terms of all the other things, I think, you know, when free time presents itself in the off season and, you know, you got to make some decisions about how you behave. It's about how you treat everybody. I think he's farther away from doing that. Where the redemption is coming is that from all that craziness, being out four games and coming back and getting your team to the Super Bowl and still, you know, managing all that and still being able to lead your team to the big game. I think that's there, but as far as is all his stuff in order at home, I think none of that stuff happens overnight. You know, he might have had some shift in thinking, but he still got to get to the off season where, you know, time freedom, there's a whole bunch of other things, and what do you do at that point is where the proof is going to have. So, you know, I really focus on what he's done on the football field, you know, and what he's been doing that, but you know, I'm still saying that he's got more growth to do off the field. In the first stage, he's saying, I got to do something about it. But, you know, he could easily have a step back, you know, but nothing's changed as quick.
Yeah, you know, I was kind of struck by Peter King's story a little bit. And before he went back and retracted or edited his own statements and, you know, gave his public oops, I was like, damn, really? Like, you know, it was in Peter King's story, for those of you that aren't aware, in Peter King's story, Goodell, he interviewed Goodell, asking him about a bunch of questions about his interaction with Ben Roethlisberger over the time that he was trying to decide on a penalty for Roethlisberger. And he said one of the quotes he had was that he talked to, you know, about a dozen NFL players, and none of them had anything positive to say about Roethlisberger. Now, King took it and inferred that he had talked to 12 Steelers. When I heard that, I was like, damn. Like, you talked to 12 of his teammates? You know, teammates will stand up for you for a lot of stuff. You know what I mean? For a lot. Your teammates will give you a pass on a lot of stuff because you're on their team. You know, it's always better to play with an a-hole than to play against the a-hole. You know, as long as that a-hole's on your team, you cool with him. But when I read that, I was kind of like, ooh, what? For real? Like, his guys ain't have his back? That to me was, like, real shocking. Then with the retraction, you know, and the correction, and when they were talking about how it was just general NFL players, it didn't feel as bad. It didn't reflect as poorly on Ben, but it still reflects poorly, I think, as far as who he is and what he's been about. You know, I would argue that he probably has done more damage socially than Michael Vick, you know, even though, yeah, and sometimes I wonder, how does Ben Roethlisberger feel about that? Every time somebody brings up Michael Vick, they bring up him as an equally, if not poor, parallel to Michael Vick. And I wonder how he feels about that, being kind of the counter-argument all the time for how racist America is, if he's even conscious of how he feels about that. But, I'm not buying it as a redemption story. I think Ben has been an a-hole to a lot of people. Going back to college, it seems like there have been a lot of stories you know, about his behavior in after-hours establishments in Pittsburgh and in Miami of Ohio. And, you know, I don't know. Maybe he's figuring it out. Maybe he's trying to get himself on the right track, but Goodell didn't seem to believe it either. And, you know, so.
And we've had these stories in the NFL a lot where people, I mean, Chris Carter, who people love now, you know, remember him in Philadelphia where he just had a destructive lifestyle going.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, went to Minnesota, you know, they sent him out of Philly. Went to Minnesota, really got refocused, put together a real nice career, got grounded. We all go through these things. I think sometimes, you know, it's kind of like what I talk to my students about professors. And, you know, try to remind them that these are people, that they may be the world's leading scholar in a certain specific time period in history, but they may not know how to balance their checkbook. And, you know, just these are people who gonna make, you know, mistakes. So I think, you know, putting these athletes in a proper perspective, you know, I evaluate what they do on the field. I understand that they have a responsibility to, you know, folks off the field. But, you know, I try to evaluate much on the field and understand that they're going to make now, what are you going to do to right that? And that's something that he's going to have to work on. But I think the redemption for him, and I don't know if it's the redemption as much as it is his ability to refocus and contribute to the success of this team, that's what you can be amazed at. Going through a lot of that stuff and still being able to, you know, deal with the injuries, being blocked in the nose, all this other stuff, and still be focused enough to win games. To me, that's still amazing because most people can't focus like that. So that's the part that I would say that Mike Vick was able to do, Ben was able to do. Not all people have that ability mentally to refocus like that and keep focus on the task and not let anything take them off of it.
Yeah, it's when the Packers beat the Bears, and you know, I said to myself, if I'm a Packer fan, I'm watching the next game, the Jets and the Steelers. If I'm a Packer fan, who do I want to face? I definitely wanted to face the Jets over the Steelers, partly because because of Ben and how well he plays in improvisational situations. I mean, he, again, when you focus on what he does on the field, dude's an amazing quarterback. He's a really good quarterback. But we also know that part of the Super Bowl and part of the 2 weeks leading up to the Super Bowl is telling those stories. And that's what pulls people in. And his story, I think, hurts that ability for the league to pull people in because, you know, it doesn't rub people the right way. It really doesn't. You know, I've heard some crazy comments about Ben from people who aren't really football fans, you know, so to speak. They're into it up here in Wisconsin because, you know, the Packers are involved. And so it's around them, and so they're kind of on the periphery of it, the casual fans, so to speak. And they have some real interesting takes on Mr. Roethlisberger. You know, I think you're a sports fan, and you have an insightful way of looking at sports. I don't think the casual fan has that same. And, you know, the Super Bowl is geared towards appeasing the casual fan, and so is the media coverage before the Super Bowl. And I think, you know, you're not buying it, I'm not buying it. I don't think the public as a whole is buying the Big Ben redemption story, which is why it hasn't gotten as much play as I thought it would. I actually thought it would get more play during these 2 weeks leading up to the Super Bowl. But it really hasn't, and I think it just hasn't played well in situations where they tried to use it.
Yeah, I think the big thing is that he's diffused it. And he has done it in a way that just irritates you. He just doesn't answer the question, or he, you know, it's kind of like it wasn't me. You know,
yeah.
He's just to participate, which I appreciate. And you know, I think the tough thing about this is that we've always had characters in sports, and particularly in football. We always have people who want the best folks off the field and autographs and kind of, you know, we've always had those kind of characters. You get blown up like you talked about in this media age when people tweet and everything else, it gets amplified in a lot of ways. But what it could, the other good thing about things like this is that those lightning rods like a Ben create interest as well. It's like, you know, it might create more support for the Packers because people don't want to see him win. And so, you know, that creates some interest there. I mean, he's not playing totally the villain role. He's just not answering the question. People aren't really believing in him, but that might also generate support for the Packers and people watching to see, you know, Steelers lose because, you know, they don't think someone like Ben should be rewarded for, you know, what he did in the offseason. So, it, you know, in some ways, being a lightning rod is not a bad thing for this week as well with it. So, this, you know, it, you know, the media day was today and all this stuff. I mean, you would get all kinds of twists and turns. And, you know, it's to the extent that when is he going to get tired of having people ask that question? I mean, because you got a lot of people there who are not, they're media types, but they're not sports media. You know, they're media types.
Right.
Folks who are trying to get the sidebar.
Right.
And that's where this stuff is, can escalate. That's where the crazy comments usually come during Super Bowl week. Because
yeah,
on it's just a crazy sidebar. But they got to write about something every day. You know, they just can't keep writing about the game.
Yep. Yeah. And that's what it boils down to, is that they have to manufacture stories in this 24-hour news cycle. And, you know, that's why I kind of put ESPN and a lot of the sports radio, I kind of stay away from the national stuff during the Super Bowl, during the 2 weeks between now and the Super Bowl. That's why I've been listening to a lot of the score, because the Bears aren't involved.
Yeah.
And so you kind of get some different sports stories, rather than if I'm listening to local Wisconsin radio, I'm getting a lot of Packers Super Bowl stories. And then the national media is running the same stories on each show over and over and over, just giving different takes and perspectives. So I kind of stay away from all that for a couple weeks and find some local stuff to listen to.
You mean you're not
talking? Because it does get redundant.
You don't want to know about that small group of Packer fans who really don't want them to win because they want Favre to legacy to live on. They don't want Aaron Rodgers to overtake it.
Yeah, man. And you know what, man? I actually don't believe that segment of the Packer fandom doesn't really exist. If it does, it's like a handful of a couple thousand people out of tens of thousands of Packer fans in the state of Wisconsin. It's a couple, it's a 1% type deal. I doubt that there are a ton of people who don't want the Packers to win the Super Bowl because they did Brett Favre wrong. I know a lot of people who are Brett Favre fans and who felt like Brett Favre was done wrong, but at the end of the day, they still riding with the Packers when it comes down to it. Especially after the season that Brett had.
Yeah.
even the most hardcore Brett fans had to be like, yo, man, you ruining it, dog. You ruining the legacy, man. You know, after this past season, I think, you know, even the people with the most of rose-colored glasses on in regards to Brett Favre have to see him a little bit differently. And Aaron Rodgers is a hard guy not to like, you know. And honestly, man, for anybody that doesn't like Ted Thompson, that's on you. If you don't like Ted Thompson, you could be qualified as a hater. The dude has done an excellent job of building that team, a team that has 16 players on IR, a team that lost quite a few quality contributors and still managed to make it to the Super Bowl after losing their quarterback for a couple of games due to concussions. I mean, they just had guy after guy after guy step up and play well. And that speaks to that's good GMing right there, man. I don't even know if that's a verb, but we're going to make it one on the Real Sports Guys. That's good GMing.
We can do that. We can rebrand that word and make it. And I agree, you know, because he was at the Bears before the Packers, wasn't he? Then he started
I'm not sure where he started out.
I thought one of them started out with the
I know he was mentored by Ron Wolf, who was running the Packers. I don't know where he came directly from though.
That team has stayed pretty consistent with what they believe in. You've been under a lot of criticism and have kept this team together. I mean, I think that's what makes the Super Bowl so special is the quality of the two organizations and how they've done it over a long period of time and even had their droughts. But when you talk about it, particularly, you know, here in the last 15 years, 20 years. I mean, both these organizations have done it the right way in a lot of different ways. And so, I mean, that's what makes this so exciting because you're looking at it's not just team against team, it's organization against organization. You know, their ability to scout talent, their ability to prepare, the history, so many Hall of Famers at the game on the sidelines and all that history that's there. You know, what the shame is that Favre can't even come and enjoy that, you know, along with the team and just be on the sideline with the other Packer greats who are going to be there. But with Green Bay, they stay with their plan. And it's the hardest thing to do is transition from a legend because people don't have the courage to do it.
Mm-hmm.
That's the biggest thing in sports that people just don't – look what happened with the Yankees. Now, by all rights, they really need to transition out of Jeter.
Yeah.
You know, but they couldn't do it. And for Ted Thompson and for McCarthy to do what they did to transition and to Aaron and know when it was time to do it, it says a lot about their organization. And to me, that's what's on display this week. These organizations that have a commitment to winning, have a long-standing following, have great fans on both sides, all that stuff is. But, yeah, you can't hate on it. You know, I was critical about them not picking up a running back. Who would know Starks would come up and you bring them a running game. They knew something I didn't know. You know, but they didn't go out there and get that free agent running back. They didn't come out and get Lynch, you know, when they could, who could have really added something to their game.
Yeah.
And he took a lot of heat on that. But, you know, they're sitting here in the Super Bowl. Well, so I'm working out. So it's going to be a really good – it's going to be a battle. You know, how do you – I want to ask, you know, thinking about the coaches. You know, we just talked about the GMs. We know they got great scouting departments. You know, but the coaching matchup is going to be – you know, I hear both these guys talk, and I'm just thinking, whoa, we're about to have a football game. They both are serious. And,
yeah.
They both got their teams ready. When you talk about where you might rank these coaches, I mean, both of them are, you know, up and coming and strong. I mean, when you think about these two coaches, you know, and what they've done, you know, how would you evaluate these coaches?
First looking at McCarthy, I think McCarthy has, one, done a really good job of putting the system in place that is going to allow his players to be successful. You know, thinking about his personnel and taking what Thompson has put there and developing a system that works for that team. I think part of the reason that they've been able to function so long without a true handed-off 20-some-times a game running back is because of McCarthy's ability to game plan. If you look at their first drives, most of their games, their first drives are pretty sound and pretty solid, and they move the ball pretty well. I mean, if you even just go back to the first drive against the Bears, it looked like they were going to put up about 50, 60 points on the Bears if every drive was going to be like that. I mean, it was precision at its best as far as Rodgers dropping back, putting the ball where it needed to be, the right plays were called. I mean, they were finding gaps in the defense. And that's good coaching. That's seeing something on film and going right at it and then forcing the other team to adjust. And then you counter and then you adjust again. But I think as far as X and O's goes, McCarthy's a really great coach. My biggest critique of McCarthy is that I don't know how far he's going to be able to go, and I think that's going to be what it's going to play a big part. But I don't know how far he's going to be able to go as far as his ability to his lack of commitment to running the ball. You know, that's the one thing that worries me for Green Bay fans in this matchup against the Steelers is that I think you need that balance. It's too good of a defense to come out and be one dimensional. You're not going to be able to just come out and say we're going to throw the ball against the Steelers because that defense is going to lock in on what you're doing, and they're going to take advantage of it, and they're going to put some pressure on you and cause you to make some mistakes. And I think he has to commit and figure out a way to keep that defense off balance. If he's not going to run it, he's going to have to scheme passes, which he can't do. They're going to keep that defense off balance. And then you got Tomlin on the other side. And Tomlin, if I had to grade the two, you know, I'm a huge Tomlin fan, so I'm gonna go with Tomlin. If I were to give it, if I were grading these two teams to give an advantage of coaching the one team, I would go with Tomlin for sure. What he's done in a short period of time of transitioning coaches, you know, with Cowher coming out, him coming in, with Cowher, they were a very, very fundamental smash mouth football team. They still have some elements of that offensively, but they're not nearly as run-oriented as they were before under Cowher. Now, I think one luxury that Tomlin has that Cowher didn't have is he has a quarterback who is ready and can put the ball in the air and make plays through the air. I really don't think Cowher ever had a quarterback who he was confident in doing that. You know, he had a couple Cordell Stewart was solid for a couple of years. And Neil O'Donnell had a couple of decent years. But it was always kind of, they were always kind of looking. And then they got Roethlisberger, and he was still young though. So they didn't just give him the keys to the F-150. You know, they're not driving a Porsche up in Pittsburgh, it's an F-150. So they just didn't toss him the keys to the F-150 and be like, go out there and let's get some work done. They kind of eased him in. They still had the bus there, and so that helped out. That helped with that transition process. But I think he's opened it up more than it ever. You know, I think they're passing the ball more now than I think they've ever had as a franchise. And I think that's, again, coaching your personnel. Mendenhall was still, I think, finding his way as a pro back. I think he's starting to get there. That offensive line is still kind of coming together. You know, the Pouncey kid is really good. I still think they need to add a couple more pieces to that offensive line. And when they do, it's going to be a nice team. And I think you're going to see more of that balance. But Tomlin, I mean, he is a master chess player. He really is. You know, I talk about how he just seems like a guy who can really motivate the hell out of people. But on top of that, I think he knows his stuff. He knows how to coach. He knows how to coach. He knows how to get guys to step up, get guys to play well, put guys in a position to play well. He knows how to let his coaches do what they do. I think that's also the other thing is that Tomlin, you know, when he came in, he wasn't really a 3-4 guy. You know, I think sometimes people forget that. He wanted them to run a 4-3. But instead, he kept Dick LeBeau on board. You know, he swallowed that bullet and said, you know what, this is what we have. This is the personnel we have. This is going to make this transition the easiest. I'm going to keep Dick LeBeau on board. We're going to run this, and this is what we're going to roll with because this is who the Steelers are. You know, he bought into that culture as well. And you know, I think he did an excellent job of taking what was there, tweaking it a little bit to fit who he is, but still keeping the essence. You know, me, man, I'm a huge Tomlin fan.
And you know, I like Tom a lot. And what I like about McCartney is that he's got the guts of a burglar. and that's the thing. Like, he's not afraid. Sometimes he overdoes it, and it gets too complex, but you don't know what he's going to come out in, that he's going to attack and go after the game. And that's where the chess game is going to be big on in this Super Bowl between LeBeau and that Packer offense is you know they're going to spread him out. You know he's going to try and be aggressive and let, you know, Rodgers do his thing, sling it around. But they just go at you. I mean, the way they did Atlanta was like, man, that was just straight up abuse in your own backyard. But they just went after him and are aggressive. And, I mean, and bringing in Don Capers, you're going to see, you know, that Blitzberg on the other side coming at it from the Green Bay side. It's just going to be a lot, like you said, it's going to be a really good chess game. I mean, you got the defensive player of the year, Polamalu, but then you got the runner-up on the Packers side, you know, a kid that was a walk-on at SC, Clay Matthews, and now he's, you know, runner-up for defensive player of the year. And Harrison, I mean, just top three vote-getters, I think, are going to be in the field on Sunday. I mean, so you got this offense, these great quarterbacks. You got these defensive stars. I mean, this is going to be big. I don't know if you want to make a prediction. We might have to have a special Super Bowl show. I don't know what we're going to do.
I'll make a prediction. I can make a prediction. Can I make a prediction?
Let's start with keys to victory.
Okay.
Well, let's go through keys. You're not going to make a prediction, but let's start with the keys of victory for victories for the Packers and for the Steelers, and then we'll make predictions.
For the Packers, I think they got to keep Rodgers upright, of course. I think they have to find that balance, whether it's with the short pass game, whether it's with scheming a short pass game or finding a run game. I think they have to find that right balance of run and pass just to keep the Steelers' defense off balance. Again, if they let that Steelers defense get into a groove, it's going to be a long day for the Packers. It's too good of a defense to just kind of let them hone in and lock in on every down is coming. You know, every down is coming to pass. I think that to me that's the key on offense is that they have to, again, whether it's with short passing, finding that balance, spread them out. I think one thing that's going to be a huge advantage in the Packers' favor, they have one of the best four-man receiving corps in the league. I mean, they have two guys at their three and four receivers who would at least be number twos, if not possibly number ones in the right situation on other people's teams. And that's one area where the Steelers struggle. If they can isolate those linebackers, a Woodley and a Harrison on wide receivers, that's going to play to their advantage. So if they can create those mismatches, and how they can scheme to create mismatches is going to really help them out, and that's going to be a key. So I think it's going to be finding, whether it's with the short pass or the run game, finding that balance to keep the Steelers' defense off balance, and then spreading them out and being able to create mismatches with isolating linebackers against their receivers or their backs coming out of the backfield. I think that's where they have an advantage on offense. On defense, tackle Roethlisberger. That's it. Tackle Roethlisberger. If you can bring down Big Ben, you got a shot. If Big Ben is shaking off defensive backs, and I think that's really what it's going to boil down to is when they get shots at them, they have to bring them down. Defensive backs, the Packers like to bring their corners a lot. And, you know, the Packers have pretty decent-sized corners, but the corners are going to have to do an excellent job tackling because when you bring a corner, that means somebody who's not a corner is covering a receiver or someone else. And so if Ben can get out of the pocket, keep a play alive, extend the play, and then make a play, that's going to cause huge problems. So when they come after him, they have to get him down. If you're going to come after him, you've got to get him down. They have to finish plays. Looking at the Steelers, with the Steelers, I think if they can do a good job of protecting Ben and allowing Ben the opportunity to extend plays, if they can let Ben do what he does and give him the opportunity to do what he does and extending plays and just keeping the key, I think that offensive line opening running lanes for Mendenhall and then allowing Ben the time to extend plays and do his improv thing is going to be key on offense for the Steelers. And then also right along with that is establishing a mentality for the game. You know, I think that's going to play a major role, is establishing a mentality, running the ball hard early, to kind of put the Packers defense on his heels. If they let them pin their ears back, they can bring heat. You know, they can bring it. They still got to bring Ben down, but they can bring it. And then on defense for the Steelers, it's going to be figuring out a way to apply pressure but still maintain the discipline and coverage without, you know, applying pressure without compromising your coverage schemes. Because Rodgers is a quick read. He reads defenses really well. He figures out who's coming hard, who's coming hot, and he gets the ball out quickly to the guy that needs to have it. And he has some really good receivers. You know, so I think those are my keys for each team. What you got?
What I would say for Green Bay, I agree. They got a spread, and they got to run out of that spread formation. Find a way to spread them, but then run out of it. You know, keep that balance. Cause I think if they can establish somewhat of a running game, that keeps the Steelers off balance. And they got to get the ball out of the hands quick. So, you know, use routes that early on, you know, that'll get the ball out of the hands of the Steelers and kind of neutralize, you know, the rush and the attack offensively. I think that's what they got to do. I mean, they got to, you know, their base formation Sunday might be spread offense. You know, because from there they can, in some ways, dictate the coverage they're going to get. You know, take a lineman out of the box. If they can run out of that, then I think that's a good way to go after the Steelers. Defensively, you know, it's going to be about, you know, what they can get done with those corners and being able to, you know, get to Ben and knock him down, make Steelers one-dimensional, neutralize that running game, maybe force them to be more of a passing team so you at least can dictate when Ben is, you know, win those early downs and get Ben into the shotgun where, you know, and make him get rid of it early so he can't, you know, sustain drives, which is, you know, easier said than done. For the Steelers, I think they got to be able to run the football. You need a big game from Mendenhall. You know, if you can get, you know, 90 to 100 yards rushing out of Mendenhall, that'll be real good for this game. Because then if they can get into third and shorts, short against Green Bay, then the Steelers offense can dictate a little bit more to Green Bay and get physical with them. Everybody's talking about the Steel line, but they've been running that football lately, and like a lot of linemen, they like to get lathered up and run block. They don't want to be sitting there pass blocking all the time and letting the defensive lineman pin the ears back. So if they can run that ball a little bit, I think that's going to be important. And using the screen game as well, you know, use that pressure. Use in some ways what you may see is them treat Matthews similar to how TCU did it to J.J. Watts.
Mm-hmm.
They optioned off him or really made him the focal point and made him think. You know, what you may see the Steelers do with that with Matthews is try to find a way to use his aggressiveness against him and get him into a point where he's thinking a little bit and, you know, screen off him on his side, do some different things that force him to not be as aggressive as he'd like to be. And then defensively, I think you got to get physical with those receivers. You know, I think, you know, so much of Green Bay's offense is on timing. And I think that if, you know, because they're going to have those linebackers out there in coverage because they don't take them off the field, the outside linebackers like Woodley and Harrison, you know, bang those receivers, throw them off their routes a little bit. I think that's going to be important that they mix it up, but they are physical with them, throwing their timing off. And the Steelers, unlike a lot of teams where they talk about how they blitz, they're going to rush four. It's just you don't know which four is going to rush.
Mm-hmm.
Different. You know, they're not going to bring. A lot of times they don't bring extra players. When they chart them out a little bit, they're bringing four, but it's just which four are they going to bring. And so, you know, if they can get physical. receivers and keep them in third and long. So don't let them get anything cheap on those early downs, but keep them in third and long. So I think those are some of the keys offensively and defensively.
Yeah, man, this is going to be a real fun game to watch. I also am excited to see both the Green Bay defense and the Green Bay offense and the Pittsburgh defense on a fast track.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people have been clamoring a little bit, listening to some of the local radio, been clamoring about, you know, the NFL should have the Super Bowl outdoors more often in a cold weather climate. And I disagree. I totally disagree with that whole train of logic. I think what you want to do is you want to have the best conditions possible for the best football game, and that's indoors and in good weather, because you can get, like this week, where, you got it in Dallas, but it's snowing in Dallas this week. And that's just not a hot environment to showcase. You know, this is just as much as this is a football game, it's a showcase. It's a showcase for the NFL, and you want it to look good. And we all love those snow, you know, the Bears in Seattle, that playoff game was a great game to watch. It was fun to watch, but I don't want to see the Super Bowl. I want weather to play a huge factor in who wins the Super Bowl, because both teams earn the right to be there, you know, and for one team to have an advantage because of the climate that they play in during the regular season, I don't think that's fair. I don't think that's what the game is about. I think the game is about seeing the best brand of football each team can bring to the table. It's about X's and O's. It's about, you know, the talent that's on the field and not what's coming out of the sky.
It'd be interesting. I mean, what if we were in New York this year?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
I mean, I watched Mikey Mike this morning, and Mike Greenberg looked so damn cold. I was like, what the hell is going on down there? The cats was, they were in, they looked like looked like pigs in a blanket. I mean, those cats were just wrapped up. So, I mean, that's Dallas, but you're right. I mean, if New York is like this and the weather's like this when it's in New York, you know, what are you going to get? So, you're right. I mean, I think to see these two teams on a fast track, watch the speed, watch the hitting, let the best team win, it's going to be a lot. So we think about predictions. Who you got?
This is still hard to do. I got to go on record, on tape. Man, I can't even, if I do that, I can't switch my pick. Dang.
We're not gonna get it together again.
Man, I'm gonna have to go with I gotta go with Pittsburgh in a close one. I think Green Bay's defense is gonna have a hard time controlling Big Ben. I also like the experience factor with the Steelers having a little bit more experience than the Packers do as far as handling the whole circus that comes with being at the Super Bowl and being able to maintain their focus. Because earlier in the week you had the injured Packers players tweeting about not being in the team picture and stuff like that, just little stuff like that. And then in contrast, you have Big Ben having to answer all these questions about his off-the-field transgressions and whatnot. And he basically says, you know what, that's a reflective question. The time for reflection is at the end of the season, so I'll holler at you after the game is over with. You know, and that's just a more professional way of going about handling the whole circus. So Pittsburgh just seems a little bit more regimented, a little bit more clear on how they need to go about doing their business this week, whereas the Packers, they got guys who ain't even playing causing a distraction through Twitter. So, yes, splitting hairs, but I'm going to have to go with the Steelers. Due to their experience, I think the teams play out evenly as far as personnel and as far as game plan. But I think I think there's an intangible piece that's going to play a major role in this game, and I think that's going to be the experience of the Steelers, and particularly the key Steeler players, Polamalu Hines Ward, Ben Roethlisberger. They've all been through this a couple times. They know how this. They know how this goes. They know how to get ready, and they know how to get ready to win. So that's where I'm going.
So I'm gonna say, hey, you know what it is? Black and yellow, black and yellow, black and yellow.
So you going with the black and yellow, huh?
Well, you know, I called it. You know, from the beginning of the playoffs, I said I know how they were going to do it. You know, because conventional wisdom, it wasn't even a football decision for me.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a lot of good football reasons why people would say the Packers would win. I mean, the Packers are they're the hottest team coming into the playoffs. They've destroyed some teams offensively. You put them on a fast track. You know, their defense has been underrated. They've just been terrorized. And from all that, you would look at Green Bay and say, hey, they can do it. But it's just something about Ben. It ain't ugly. Ben is just – it's just – you just don't know how he does it. Look, like the last game, Sanchez had better stats than he had.
Yeah.
It's like he threw for 300 yards and four touchdowns. He didn't. But
you
felt like he was the best player on the field. It's going to be something about that. It's going to be a great game. It feels like it's going to be like that game when Santonio Holmes caught that last-second touchdown.
Yeah.
Or a big catch. You know, it's going to be one of those type of games going back and forth. But I just think – I look at Tomlin, I just think they're ready. I mean, I think they needed to get to this moment, and now you're just going to see, you know, a whole level, different level type of team.
Mm-hmm.
I think their defense is going to be – smothering. I think they know, you know, Dick LeBeau might not have too many more games. He's thinking about retiring. But there's a lot of emotional things happening here. And I just think that they're going to find a way to close a deal on this one. But I think it's going to be close. I mean, I got a lot of respect for the Packers. And I wouldn't be, you know, if they won, I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, if you look at it from the onset, you say the Packers are buzzsaw, can't be stopped. But I just feel like somehow, Big Ben, it's got to be the story. Because so many people are against him. You know what I'm saying? So many people are against him. And what's going to be fitting? When he wins the championship, he's going to still answer all those questions. It just feels like that's going to be the end. The monkey off his back, whatever they try to say, that's going to be the end. But it's going to be a close game. It's going to be good.
Yeah, so we both in on the Steelers. We think it's going to be a close game. I'm looking forward to it, man. This is a Super Bowl that I'm really interested in seeing how everything shakes down and how everything shakes out. It's going to be fun. You know, people up here are going nuts. I'm looking out my back patio, and I got about 2 or 3 feet of snowdrift leaning up against my patio window like it's going to come inside. So for all y'all out there listening, enjoy the night. Stay warm. Stay safe. Snoop Dogg is in town. So if you went out to check out Snoop, hope you didn't have no troubles with that. You know, take care.
Man, I'm sitting here in my hotel room looking out like you said. And it's basically up to my dang window. What am I doing? LA. We look forward to next week having a post-Super Bowl conversation. We talk about the labor talks.
Oh, wow. Yeah, we didn't even get into that.
I'm on my daddy's record.
Hey, man, we wrapped.
man, I'm looking out here, the snow is up to the window. I don't know if it's on top of something, but it's up to the window.
Yeah, man, this snow is crazy. It is seriously crazy, man.
I mean, I didn't have a hat on, and it was hitting my head so tough. I just got to oh, my goodness. I need to get out of here, get down south.
I'm telling you, man. Oh, man, I'm not even looking forward to getting out there and shoveling in the morning, man. Not at all. Ugh.
I'm glad I'm nowhere near
thought of it.
I'm just like,
thought of it.
I'm glad I'm not even, I'm going to have breakfast here and relax and, you know, I don't know if I'm even going to deal with it yet.
Yeah.
Goodness, man, this is crazy out here.
Ain't it?
It's going to be in my what do they call it, the what's it called, the limber bed or numb, whatever they call that dude over here, where you got the little adjustments you can make.
Yeah. Sleep number, whatever.
Yeah. I'm going to try to see how I can get that right. I'm just going to just get out there and hibernate. Well, it was a good show, man.
Yeah, good show.
Yeah, Phil T hit me up on a text and said he thought it was a great show, so we pulled it together.
Yeah. Well, all right, man. I'm gonna go ahead and hit the hay.
Okay.
I'll catch up with you.
All right.
Sometime, you know, over the next week, I'll probably be hitting you with text during the game.
Yeah.
With little nuggets and notes that we may wanna, you know, just be mindful of.
Yeah, I'm about to try and sit there and break that down because we have a lot to talk about next week.
Yeah, we will.
All right.
All right, man. Take care.
Yep.
Yep.